Welcome to NFL Live, presented by KFC. The Bucs won big on Monday Night Football, but the headlines all about the Giants. Glad you're with us on a busy Tuesday. Dan Orlovsky, Ryan Clark are here. We've also got Marcus Spears and Mina Kimes. Diana Russini will join us a little bit later, but let's begin with the breaking news here. Everything about the Giants. They fired their offensive coordinator, Jason Garrett. This in the wake of a 30-10 loss to the Bucs and continuing offensive struggles. The Giants have averaged 18.9 points per game this season. That ranks 25th in the league. Giants head coach Joe Judge was asked about the coaching after last night's game, before today's news on Garrett. Take a listen to what he had to say then.
Yeah, put that on down. You can put that down tonight. Got that? You guys can write that tonight. All right. Now, the players got to execute. That's their job, right? It's our job to teach them. It's their job to go out there and execute. But we've got to make sure we keep putting them in a position to have success. And it's got to be consistently that way. So, you know, you can go ahead and write that down. And I'm not going to debate that.
You have still have faith in Jason Garrett as your offensive coordinator?
I have faith in all the people on our team, players, coach, everything. But, you know, look, we'll assess everything as a team, make any move we need to going forward. I'm not going to go into that right now.
Very telling. All right. So Daniel Jones produced 24 touchdown passes as a rookie, but he's thrown 20 over the last two seasons combined with Jason Garrett as OC. Jones hasn't really improved situationally under Garrett, struggling greatly to operate effectively out of play action as well as when he's blitzed. And when it comes to finishing drives, Jones has the second worst QBR over the last two seasons in the red zone. We start with you, Marcus Spears. Did this move make sense for the Giants?
Yeah, it did. It did. It was time. It was stale. It needed some nuance to this offense. Look, we've been on this show since the beginning of the season, and we've talked about offenses that have the ability to be multiple. We've talked about creativity and the things that you need in order to win in today's NFL, and the New York Giants just didn't have it. And when you look at the talent and the things that were available, you see some guys that have dynamic playmaking ability on this football team. And I believe Jason Garrett just played it close to the vest. Look, JG's my guy. He coached in Dallas. He was my head coach when I was in Dallas, but his offense was stale. That's the bottom line. And look, this is the progression as well. Okay, you drafted a quarterback, number 6 overall a few years ago, Dave Gettleman. He's probably going to be the last guy to go. They are going to try to figure out things of how to help Daniel Jones potentially. And then if that doesn't work, then it'll fall on Daniel Jones' shoulder. But this is the line of attrition that takes place when you have an offense that has no juice.
Yeah, and when you look at this team and you think about this offense, it really took on the personality of Jason Garrett. And Jason Garrett is the guy I played with early on in my career. Great man, good friend, awesome teammate, boring as hell. And that's what this offense was. This offense was boring. This offense didn't have any creativity. This offense didn't make you look at it and think explosiveness, right? Or think, you know what, how do I stop them? Which way are they going to attack me? Because you knew each and every week. Mm-hmm. And when you get rid of Jason Garrett first, it makes me think that you believe you do have playmakers. You believe you do have pieces.
They do.
And they're just not working. So, Dan, when you look at this offense, was his largest failure not putting the players that were assembled in the right positions to succeed?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You talk about some of the skill position guys, because I think the skill position is too talented for this offense to be too bad. Like, they paid a ton of money for Kenny Golladay. Mm-hmm. They used Kenny Golladay in the wrong way. Like, I would be using Kenny Golladay almost like the Cardinals use DeAndre Hopkins. Just go out there, see if you can win on two or three
runs.
We're just going to throw you kind of
opportunity
throws.
That's what we saw in Detroit.
Right. You know, Kadarius Toney. I would be using Kadarius Toney like Kyle Shanahan uses Deebo Samuel. How many different ways can I just give you the football? Yeah. Shep. I would be using Shep like the Bills that they use Cole Beasley. But it all comes down to Daniel Jones and his lack of development or them helping him develop. Mm. The problem with Daniel is he still makes the same mistakes way too routinely that he did coming out of college. That interception last night is the perfect example of the number one flaw of him coming out of college was panicking with the football. And there's that moment. It's like, for me, it's the anti-Joe Burrow where, you know, we've seen too consistently where Daniel panics with the football. It's who he was coming out of school, and it hasn't gotten better. And I don't think that they certainly don't believe Jason Garrett's the guy to believe that they can
change
fix
that.
It out of the quarterback.
Yeah, you know, I think you can look at this a few different ways. You know, maybe it's just that Jason Garrett's the only piece of this, or maybe this is the beginning of steps that the Giants are going to take. Yeah. You know, Mina, do you expect the Giants to sort of blow this whole thing up and start fresh next year, or are some of these pieces salvageable in your mind?
Well, to me, it all starts with the Daniel Jones question as to, you know, whether or not you move forward with him or your quarterback. And there are kind of two schools of thought on this. You hear some people say, how can you even evaluate this guy because of the pieces around him, the lack of protection, which was notable last night, and some of the issues with play calling. And then you have people saying, well, what Dan just said, which is we're talking about a player who was unfortunately still making the same mistakes he did as a rookie. I mean, that interception is honestly one of the worst interceptions I've seen all season. My feeling is both of those things are true, and ultimately both fall at the feet of the general manager, Dave Gettleman, because not only did he draft Daniel Jones, taking a lot of people by surprise, he also put together this football team. Right. And there's been a lot of mistakes in the draft over the years preceding Daniel Jones with the Saquon Barkley pick, all the way up to signing Kenny Golladay, who Dan, I agree, is a good player, but they signed him to a contract that, frankly, didn't make sense given the wide receiver market. Look, Gettleman has made some good decisions. I think the Bradbury signing, James Bradbury, the cornerback, stands out, some decent draft picks. But at the end of the day, this is his football team. And the football team just isn't good enough. Mm.
So Freddie Kitchens appears to be the likely successor to Jason Garrett as the Giants play caller. Listen, I will tell you this. Kitchens went 5-3 after taking over as play caller for the Browns in 2018.
You can't make this up.
Woo! Now, we're just getting started here on NFL Live. So are the Kansas City Chiefs, just in the nick of time. They're feeling good after four straight wins, but RC will tell you why their offense isn't what it needs to be yet to be in major contention. Plus, Super Cam is back after just one game in Joe Brady's offense. We'll tell you why they just scratched the surface with Cam. You can't count the Panthers out of the playoff picture. NFL Live is presented by KFC. You want fried chicken quick? Order KFC Quick Pickup right now on the KFC app or at KFC.com.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
NFL Live is brought to you by Facebook Portal. Share something real.
When he came to us, you know, Rodney made no apologies for what he was going to bring. And it was early in minicamp where Troy's like running a route across the middle. It was Troy Brown, you know, this is a guy, 2001, incredible player. 2002 was our best receiver. And Rodney, we have no pads on. Like, he gives Troy a shoulder elbow after he's catching a pass across the middle. And everyone's like, what the f*** are you doing? And then Rodney's talking to him as he gets up. And it was just like, oh, it's going to be like that.
Man in the Arena, Tom Brady, presented by Facebook Portal, takes you inside each of Tom Brady's 10 Super Bowl seasons. You're the access right there. New episodes available every Tuesday on ESPN Plus, including this week's edition, a breakdown of Super Bowl 38, that season from back in 2003. So let's read and react around the NFL. Everything you need to know, as somehow we're already headed into week 12. How's that even possible? We got Thanksgiving games this week. Let's get you updated on all the latest. We begin with the Kansas City Chiefs. And they seem to have figured some things out after a rocky start to the season. Four straight wins. The offense has looked better, right? The defense, especially Chris Jones, lights out against the Cowboys on Sunday. And just like that, KC, right back in the postseason mix. I'm not sure if they ever really left because we were all like, oh, can't count out the Chiefs because they got Patrick Mahomes. But, RC, is this Chiefs offense back?
No, it's not back. When you look at what they were able to do against the Dallas Cowboys early, you were excited. But you also watched the Dallas Cowboys, and they were playing a nickel coverage with Leighton Vander Esch in the middle. They were playing some single high safeties. When they made that switch to the two high, much like Atlanta Falcons did week 16 last year, and we've seen since, this was an offense that was slow. This was an offense that was relegated to field goals. And Patrick Mahomes even said it after the game. They aren't playing at the level they need to be or at a level we've seen them. This isn't explosive like 2019. It isn't explosive like 2020. And I have one huge question. what's wrong with Travis Kelce?
I know. We've wondered, could it be injury? Yeah. Could he just not be feeling himself? By the way, that was Patrick Mahomes' seventh career game with zero passing touchdowns, including the playoffs. All right, so the Chiefs are now 5-2 in those types of games. Let's get to the Bengals next. They're currently the top wild card team in the AFC, coming off a 19-point win over the Raiders, right, where Joe Burrow passed only for 148 yards. Marcus, you like what you saw from the Bengals' offense on Sunday, as we've sort of been wondering about this Cincinnati team lately.
I absolutely loved it, L Boogie, and it's because they stayed with basics and they never abandoned the run game. Joe Mixon had 30 rushes for 123 yards, which in turn opened things up for Joe Burrow. He wasn't asked to carry the whole load for this offense, and it was a lot of toss action. It was a lot of finding space for Joe Mixon. This game was 16-13 late into the football game, and then the explosion happened. Derek Carr turns the football over, but Cincinnati never got away from physicality in the run game, and in turn, it opened things up for Chase, especially in the back of the end zone. It was a phenomenal plan because they stuck with the ground and pound.
Yeah, that works, especially when it comes to you. You love that. All right, let's get to the Bills and Joe Burrow. Excuse me, not Joe Burrow. Opposing defenses for the Bills and Josh Allen have shifted their approach to defending him. How much the Bills throw the ball has factored in there. They're relying more on their four-man pass rush, right, with Allen facing a blitz at the third lowest mark after he saw the third highest clip in 2020. Allen's faced cover two at the third highest rate this year after Patrick Mahomes and Trevor Lawrence. So, Dan, defenses have obviously changed up how they're dealing with Josh Allen and how they're planning for the Bills. That Buffalo offense, have they made any adjustments on their end?
Not yet. Those numbers are staggering. Yeah. I kind of said this. The Bills are making themselves too one-dimensional. Now, that impacts everybody attached to a defense. Think if you're a defensive coordinator. You don't have to play the cat and mouse game at all. You could just go, okay, I'm going to call third down and long defenses because I'm just going to get the pass game. As a defensive lineman, you can just strictly play vertical. There's no horizontal worry because they're not going to run the football. You don't have to play with your eyes in the backfield. Where's the ball going? Is it to my left or my right? Shed a block and go make a tackle. You can just go find where the quarterback. As a linebacker, you don't ever have to take a step forward. Your first step can be back because you're anticipating pressure. You don't have to pay attention to anything that's happening in front of you because you're expecting the ball to get tried to, at least, get the ball get thrown over your head. And then as a secondary guy, you don't have to worry about tackling at all. It is strictly just playing pass coverage, studying route concepts, making sure that you're keeping the ball in front of you, and then rallying to go tackle a receiver. You're never forced to play in a forced situation. You're never forced to come up and hit a tailback. And so when the Bills are doing this offensively, they're making it so much easier on defenses to play against them. I think they have to be critical and look at themselves and say, how are they going to help their offense and really challenge defenses more right now, because they're making it way too easy for everybody attached to a defense.
Yeah, you got to think they are at least noticing some of the things that we're noticing on tape here. We'll see if they can get things right. Let's get to our next area, which is Green Bay. And, of course, they've been dealing with a lot of injuries. They lose offensive lineman Elgton Jenkins for the season to the torn ACL. Jenkins was a Pro Bowl left guard last season before moving to left tackle to replace the injured David Bakhtiari. Mina, just how big of a loss is this for Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay offense?
This is a massive loss. Elgton Jenkins, one of the best young offensive linemen in the league. I say offensive lineman because, as you mentioned, he's played both inside and outside for them. Now, in the short term, without him and before David Bakhtiari returns to play left tackle, they do have Yashua Nijman, who did play and start for the Packers pretty well in Jenkins' absence earlier in the season. But this is not a team in Green Bay that has short-term ambitions. Even when David Bakhtiari comes back, Jenkins' presence on the inside will be missed, especially if they got to play a pass rush like the Rams, where they can attack them on the inside with Aaron Donald. Huge loss for Green Bay. This is a blow to their Super Bowl aspirations.
Yeah, for what it's worth, by the way, Aaron Rodgers has the third lowest completion rate when under duress this season. He's ahead of only Zach Wilson and Jameis Winston. All right, more NFL Live is coming your way. Do not count the Panthers out of the playoff picture now with Cam at the helm. Dan and RC are going to head to the touchscreen, show you just how scary this Joe Brady offense can be down the stretch. You're watching NFL Live presented by KFC.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hey, Swagoo season is in full effect. Don't miss the final night. The Madden 22 Ultimate Thanksgiving as Marcus takes his seat right there at the head of the table to kick things off for the second event of the MCS season. This time, the prize pool has been raised to $250,000. Who do you think will claim the crown as the GOAT of Madden 22? And the Madden 22 Ultimate Thanksgiving streaming live this Wednesday night at 7 p.m. Eastern on the ESPN app, the EA Madden NFL Twitch channel, and the Madden Competitive Gaming channel on YouTube.
Mina, how do we say Cam Newton's name on this show?
Cam Damn Newton's
going to
run the ball.
Cam Damn Newton.
Newton takes the snap, runs to the right side, lunges forward, he's in.
First thing we said when we saw him was, damn, that's a quarterback?
Cam takes the snap, rolling right, throws. For the end zone, it's caught, touchdown.
He run past your secondary at 260. You like, damn, he fast.
You're back! You're back!
It's Cam Damn Newton.
All right, Marcus, is the damn back?
The damn is back. Cam Woo! Looks phenomenal. Listen, I was focused on the athletic standpoint. I remember last we talked to L Boogie that Cam looked a little stagnant.
Yes.
And he had COVID, and we was like, is he still suffering from this? Man, the dude looked fast against the Washington football team. He absolutely burned the defense to the end zone. He's throwing the rock. He's playing with so much more confidence. It's a great understanding. Cam, the damn Newton is back, y'all.
I was rooting so hard for the damn to be back. Thank you. All right, Cam Newton certainly has a case as one of the most dynamic quarterbacks this game has ever seen, including both games this season. Cam has an NFL record 44 games in his career with both a passing and rushing touchdown ahead of greats like Steve Young and Aaron Rodgers. Cam already has three touchdown passes this year. Last year in New England, he didn't throw his third TD pass until the Pats' ninth game. Let's get some DraftKings predictions. Our focus will be on Thursday's Thanksgiving matchups. Marcus, more pass yards, Derek Carr or Dak Prescott?
I'm going Derek Carr. I'm trying to recover from that damn breakdown just now. I'm going Derek Carr because I believe that the Dallas Cowboys will come out and try to establish the ground game. We heard Mike McCarthy allude to it about how they wanted to get back to a physical nature of football. And also, I know the damn Dallas Cowboys watched what Cincinnati did to the Las Vegas Raiders football team. I have to believe Derek Carr will have to throw it more than Dak Prescott.
Mina, does Darren Waller get at least six receptions?
I think he does. After opening the season with what felt like 30 targets, Darren Waller was a little bit quiet, but bounced back in a big way last week with seven targets. Dallas, if they do have a weakness on defense, it is defending tight ends, 23rd in DVOA. He is both Derek Carr's safety net and his deep target. I expect him to get at least six targets in this game.
Marcus, who are you picking in this game?
Y'all know who I got.
I'm
taking the Dallas
answer?
Cowboys, a bounce-back game against the Kansas City Chiefs, and they will get it right, figure it out. And Kellen Moore, the offensive coordinator, will realize that Tony Pollard and Zeke Elliott is his best option to try to win football games right now at this point.
This is my Swagoo face. Anytime anyone asks him who's picking when the Cowboys are playing. All right, let's get to the injury report on Thanksgiving. We're getting closer and closer to the start of Week 12. We bring in Diana Russini. Diana, what is the latest starting with Cowboys receiver CeeDee Lamb?
Well, we saw that Cowboys offense look like it was a little slowed down when CeeDee Lamb hit his head right before the first half at Arrowhead right on the turf. Well, good news, Stephen Jones went on 105.3, the Fan in Dallas, to give an update. And he was really optimistic, Laura. He says that Lamb has been attending team meetings, which the reason why that's a good sign is that means he's not being sensitive to light when he's looking at the screen. So still no official word, but it looks good. Meantime, for the New Orleans Saints, guys, they've been struggling so much without their top running back and this receiver at this point in Alvin Kamara. He's continuing to deal with that knee injury. I spoke with Mike Triplett, who's down at the on the ground in New Orleans, and he said that Kamara is not at practice. The official report has not come out just yet, but so far at the starter practice, they did not see Kamara there or Mark Ingram at this point. But I did speak to one source with the New Orleans Saints, and they said that Kamara is feeling a little better. So no word on if he's officially in. Meantime, Chicago, tons of news, not just because of the quarterback position where Andy Dalton was officially named the starting quarterback because Justin Fields is dealing with those fractured ribs. He's still getting looked at and going under evaluation, but Andy Dalton will take over the reins there. And, you know, guys, there was a report that was floating around earlier today that Bears head coach Matt Nagy was getting fired after this Thanksgiving game. The press corps there asked him that question. He addressed it. He says that he was unaware of that. He had not met with ownership just yet. So for now, Matt Nagy is the head coach of the Chicago Bears as they get ready to play on Thanksgiving.
All right. Thanks so much, Diana. And so glad to have you back on NFL Live. We missed you.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We got a lot more coming your way today. Baker Mayfield and the Browns won on Sunday, but this team is not the same team we watched last season. Marcus tells us why Baker's comments aren't the only concerns.
DraftKings is the official daily fantasy partner of the NFL. And this Sunday only, new players can play free for over $1 million in total prizes when you make your first deposit.
You're watching NFL Live, presented by KFC. Monday Night Football back next week. Russell Wilson and the Seahawks face a must-win game. When they take on Taylor Heinicke and the Washington football team, they've won two straight, 8 Eastern on ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and the ESPN app. Coverage begins with Monday Night Countdown at 6 Eastern. Last night on Monday Night Football, Tom Brady avoided his first 3-game losing streak since the 2002 season with a 20-point victory over the Giants. And Brady's now won 4 straight against the Giants since losing in Super Bowl 46. Tom Brady pressured on 17% of his dropbacks and remains the least pressured QB this season. Rob Gronkowski had been bothered by back and rib injuries in recent weeks, but he saw 45 snaps on Monday night. The offense was much different with him back. Tampa averaged over 6 yards per play with Gronk on the field, over 2 yards more on average than in 31 snaps when he was off. And Brady's QBR was 27 points higher when Gronk was on the field. 27 points higher. Mina, I think that number tells it all, but how important is Gronk in that offense?
He is so important. Yeah. You know, watching last night's game, I was thinking actually back to when the Bucs played the Giants last year, and it was sort of a turning point in the season after that where they became such a good 12 personnel team with the two tight ends on the field. Ended up finishing 3rd in expected points added per play. This year, without Gronk in 12 personnel, with the other tight ends, they've been 21st in EPA per play. And it's so important, Laura, because Tom Brady, much like, you know, Patrick Mahomes and Josh Allen, has been getting a lot of those too high safety looks. You saw last night, almost every single one of Gronk's targets, went back and watched them all this morning, came against those too high looks. He is the Bucs' answer to that deep safety coverage, and having him on the field, it just makes a world of difference for this Bucs offense.
No, listen, I absolutely agree with Mina. My tape was on Rob Gronkowski last night and what he adds to this offense, especially in between the numbers. Bruce Arians also mentioned something last night that was very important, is that Gronk is also one of the best blocking tight ends that has ever played this game. And so when you have a guy who's dual threat like that, a guy who affects the run and the pass game, it's huge for your offense in general. And when you look at the way life cycles, right, when we start off life, we like blankets and we need our blankets and we need our comfort. And then we get really old and all those things roll back around and we want that same type of comfort again. I mean, some of us even go from Pampers to Pampers. Tom Brady needed that comfort early on in his career. And I think as his career winds down, he still needs that same type of comfort with a player that he can count on. There was a play where he extends the play, Gronk gets open, Tom Brady hits him. He only looked for Rob Gronkowski once that play broke down. I think that means a lot to Tom and a lot to Tampa.
So I think we've all decided here that Tom Brady still needs diapers and that Rob Gronkowski
that wasn't what I said.
Is a diaper.
That okay. wasn't what I said.
So,
Laura.
Well, it was sort of what you said. Let's move to the Browns and Baker Mayfield. Had a couple of interceptions in the win over the Lions. Worth remembering that he said last week he's more banged up than he's ever been. But either way, Baker was asked about Browns fans booing him and the offense. And here's what he had to say at the exchange with the reporter yesterday.
Baker, what did you make of some of the booing there in the second half from the fans?
Those are probably the same fans that won't be quiet while we're on offense and trying to operate. So don't really care.
All right, so we were trying to talk about this at the very end of the show yesterday. We kind of ran out of time here.
He's so mad.
Marcus,
look how mad he is.
What's your reaction when you see Baker directly addressing fans like that?
I thought we were past this, is my reaction. Honestly, like, look, I get it, man. Baker is banged up. He's not playing well. The team is not having the type of success. I understand frustration. Everybody on this show understands frustration. You know what ain't gonna help us, though? It's pointing the finger at anybody else, right? Like, when you look at franchise QBs, when you think about this particular situation that Baker is in, it's deflection time and just get to work and figure out how you can be better with the things that you're dealing with personally. Look, I want to be visceral. I want to go crazy on Baker Mayfield for his reaction because I didn't like it. And look, the fans, they were there before you. They're going to be there while you're there. They're going to be there after you're gone. You will never win that battle and trying to get tit for tat with fans in the stands. But the problem is that this is a sign of the things that hampered Baker Mayfield earlier on in his career. Paying attention to things that really don't matter. And I think that's the part that I got to. A bit of adversity, and now he goes right back to going tit for tat with people.
Yeah, for me, it's empires crumble and fall from the inside out. Now, I go back to weeks ago. It was the conversation about Odell Beckham. And whose fault is it? Why can't we get him to football? And then 2 weeks ago, post-game, Myles Garrett essentially calls out their defensive coordinator. We didn't make any adjustments within the football game on the sideline. Nothing happened. And now this, where Baker Mayfield is mouthing off at the fans. Where's the leadership in the locker room to make sure that they don't implode? Who's going to be the guy that is the rock in the locker room to make sure that the noise on the outside and all the antics that are going around this football team don't become more important than the accomplishments of the football team? The play on the field is not good right now. When that starts to happen, and then fingers start to get pointed, quarterback to receiver, receiver to quarterback, defensive end to defensive coordinator, now quarterback to fans, all the finger pointing starts to tear away at the fabric of a locker room. And you need somebody in there. If it's Myles Garrett, if it's Baker Mayfield, if it's Jarvis Landry, is it Wyatt? Somebody's got to be the rock in this locker room, in this organization, to make sure that they don't start to implode and fall apart inside out. Because when it's bad on the field, it starts to trickle into the locker room. And that's what I'm starting to sense from the Cleveland Browns. All the finger pointing, it's all going to come back upon the individuals.
All right, so the Browns are at the Ravens Sunday night. And more on the Ravens, guys. Our Ravens Nation reporter Jameson Hensley tweeted this. Lamar Jackson didn't participate in Tuesday's walkthrough, but he was at the Ravens facility today. Remember, Jackson missed Sunday's 16-13 win at Chicago because of an illness that was not COVID-related. So keep an eye on that as we wonder exactly what's going on with the Browns. Still to come on NFL Live, the Cowboys' performance on Sunday has some of our analysts scratching their heads at where the Eagles might have found their groove. When we come back, a deep dive into the NFC East and who might end up winning this division after all. NFL Live is presented by KFC.
There's a real urgency for us to get it right. So it's going to be a big challenge for us, and we got to get back to playing the way we're capable of playing.
Wow, was that easy for Tampa Bay? Touchdown, Buccaneers!
He's having his way with this defense because they're not making it very difficult for him. They're showing why this was the unit that really carried this team to the Super Bowl title.
Good win for our team. Obviously, losing two straight really sucks in the NFL. Glad it's not three straight.
The Bucs won big on Monday night, but it also brought us a special Tuesday edition of Big Man Ball and Swagger. We couldn't let this go unnoticed.
Ain't no way in hell we was gonna let this go unnoticed. And I apologize, Jason Garrett, but you went out with a bang. dog, because you got a big fella in the end zone. Andrew Thomas, University of Georgia, he got the Jordan 1 zone. This was a great play call. This was not boring. This had some nuance to it. And look at the big fella go up and high point the football. I know my dog RC will appreciate that. Look at the vertical. Yes, we jump higher than over a piece of paper. Yes, we have hands. Yes, we can come down, secure the catch, and then dance, and then dance, and then dance with the whole crew. Here's the thing that I love about it. The swag was on point because he had the Jordan 1 cleats on. Ooh. He went up and elevated and caught the football. And in our minds, this big man, we are the best athletes to ever live. And this is further proof that big, fast people beat little, fast people.
Hey, I will tell you this, though.
Tuesday special edition.
I will tell you this. Jason Garrett did two things to big people last night. He dialed up that touchdown. He also threw an interception to Steve McClendon, and that's why he don't have no job.
Oh, boy. Here we go. All right.
A lot of big men caught football.
He just wanted to get on BMB.
We're trying to get a little positivity about the Giants, but now to the reality of the NFC East standings. You won't even see them on the screen right here because they're in last place. But the NFC East has always been a competitive affair. The division has gone 16 straight seasons without a repeat champ. The Cowboys are in the driver's seat there with FBI giving them at least a 90% chance to make the playoffs and win this division. Philly has been making moves, winning three of the last four, have FBI's easiest remaining schedule, while Dallas's remaining slate is middle of the pack in terms of difficulty. So, Mina, let's start with the Eagles. What has been the catalyst of their turnaround in recent weeks?
It's the run game. It's simple. Yeah. And I love, by the way, just saying run game because it applies to more than just one player. Jalen Hurts, his ability, what he does on the ground, it empowers the entire team. It empowers the offensive line, which is arguably the best run-blocking group in the NFL right now. It empowers the running backs. Watching the Eagles call so much zone read, it does remind me a little bit of the Seahawks in 2012, if you'll indulge me a little bit, in a walk down memory lane. Things aren't so great in Seattle, but back when they were happier, there's a reason why Marshawn Lynch had a renaissance when he came to Seattle, because having Russell Wilson next to him, the threat of him keeping open things up for him. Watch the linebackers playing the Eagles, man, in every game. They do not know what to do. It is an extremely difficult run game to defend and an extremely fun run game to watch.
100%.
Everyone, make sure you watch NFL Live next week because we are going to dive into this kind of topic a lot. But think of all the offenses in the NFL that we've talked about glowingly this year. It's not 2018 or 2019 or 20 anymore. It's the teams that we feel can run the football really well because of the way defenses are playing. And Mina's right with the run game, the variety of it. Philadelphia, I hate him. Philadelphia is doing it so well, and I honestly feel confident saying this. They're a team you don't want to play. They are a team you don't want to play in. Dallas, directly to you, they're a team you don't want in the playoffs. Think about the Eagles and the way they're constructed, right? The Dallas Cowboys strength is their offensive line. The Philadelphia Eagles' strength is their defensive line. Also, they got a defensive player, their cornerback as well. Now, the Eagles' strength, their offensive line. The Cowboys' strength, their defensive line.
Yeah.
So you're talking about a team that can kind of minimize the strength of the Dallas Cowboys. And they play Week 18. And I think Dallas is going to win the division still. I think, you know, Philadelphia is way more attached to, like, Carolina and New Orleans and San Francisco and Minnesota.
Yeah.
But they are trending towards becoming a team that you don't want to play. And they're trending towards becoming a team, Dallas, in your division that you don't want to get in.
A good reminder that Week 18 could come down to a lot in a variety of divisions. But, Marcus, let's talk about the Cowboys a minute here. How concerned are you about what you've seen on the field the last 2 weeks from Dallas?
I'm actually not that concerned, y'all. And I got to be honest with you. It doesn't have anything to do with Dallas. I think the Denver game was a blip on the radar. And when I look at the Kansas City game, obviously the offense took a step back. And there are reasons for that. But ultimately, you got to play to win these games. And you got to do what you can do successfully. I think Dallas got a little bit drunk on the success that they had pushing the ball down the football field. Yep. And they needed this Kansas City game to remind them of where they're actually built and how they're built in order to beat teams and then help facilitate what they do down the field. Here's my concern with the Dallas Cowboys going forward. Will the complacency take over the way you call football games and play football games? For me, it's about being mental. I'm with you, Dan. I understand the fear of what the Eagles do as a defensive lineman trying to find spaces in no man's land. But remember, people fear what the Dallas Cowboys do as well when they are doing it. And that's the point that I want to get across. They better get back to being the team that they were multiplicity-wise as opposed to being one-dimensional.
Yeah, and I agree with Marcus. You don't get to a point to where you think the Dallas Cowboys are out of it, right? Or where they can't compete to win an NFC championship. I'm definitely not on that high I was early on in the season because, yes, when you have the game against the Denver Broncos, it is just a blip. You think to yourself, okay, Dak was out. He didn't get the opportunity to practice. He was a little rusty, and the defense needed to have a little wake-up call. And they've played better the last 2 weeks. But when you see a team in 2 of 3 weeks not operate at a high level, but more importantly, not show up to a game of this magnitude, that's my issue. Because every game when you get to the playoffs, even week 18 against the Philadelphia Eagles, is going to be a game of that magnitude. What type of energy are you going to bring? What type of consistency are you going to bring? And what level of confidence do you have in your coaching staff to make proper adjustments? We have to see those things happen down the line.
Guys, let's get some news here before we go. New on NFL Live from Jets Nation reporter Rich Cimini. Quarterback Zach Wilson is going to start Sunday against the Texans. So the rookie is back after missing 4 games with a knee injury. And then this from Field Yates. The Jets have placed quarterback Joe Flacco and Mike White on the reserve COVID-19 list. So a little thin there in that Jets quarterback room. Guys, got time for one more thing before we go. Everybody has a favorite side dish on Thanksgiving, right? But Pat's Matthew Judon has a least favorite.
We got to get macaroni and cheese off the table. All right, guys. It's just cheese and noodles. All right, I'm getting on my soap opera. It's just cheese and noodles, and it's not that good. Get a macaroni and cheese off the table, and it'd be a much better Thanksgiving for everybody in the house. Every time I try it, it's the same thing, and it's disgusting. If you want to have a good Thanksgiving, don't cook macaroni and cheese.
Marcus! Marcus, he's born in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, bro. Clearly, did Marcus take off all this stuff?
He's on mic.
Clearly, he's not had it the right way.
I will never stand. I will never stand for the blasphemy that we just had on this damn show.
It is not.
This is the producer's fault. This is the people that decided to put this on television.
No.
And first of all, Marcus, if you got crumbles on the top of your mac and cheese, throw it the hell away.
Hey, all I want to say is happy Thanksgiving to everybody. We are so thankful to all of you.
They definitely put raisins on potato salad.
We'll see you next week on NFL Live.